Good morning. 6:52 a.m. on Monday morning, August the 18th, 2014. So I walked with in silence this morning for the first mile. I didn't turn on music, I didn't turn on the metronome, I just walked. Which just, I think, underscores the reality that the music tempo controls my pace. Because when I'm left to my own devices, it tends to be a little bit faster than the average, particularly the average Boingo Boingo set. So yesterday was, let me back up a bit here. Yesterday was another one of those days where I slept in, which is good because I am really tired. I'm not quite sure why I'm really tired, but I am really tired. I'm even more tired today than I was yesterday. In part because I got up at 5:45. And went to bed a little bit later than I wanted to, or at around 10. And yesterday I got a call from Evo Terra, and found out that one of our fellow podcast authors is dying. He may be gone already. Late stage cancer. They've known about it for maybe a couple of weeks. And they've already, it's already started. Major organ failure throughout his body. So, yeah, it's really a question of days, not even weeks, could be hours. If you're on Facebook today, and you may find a photograph of P.G. Holyfield. P.C. Haring took one of the book launch party that PG and Patrick McLean and I were working on, were in the famous, well, the author always reads from his own books, how about if we read from each other's book? And so we did. And I read a piece from McLean, actually I think I read two pieces from McLean. I read PG's, the opening of Murder at Avedon Hill. McLean read the making coffee scene from Quartershire. That was a tremendous amount of fun. With the reading the author, with the author in the room, and an audience that was spellbound. It was amazing. It was wonderful. It was uplifting. So that's the memory I will have of P.G. Holyfield. But it has me thinking about the nature of our connections with others. Without the internet, I wouldn't know PG. Without podcasting, we would never have collaborated. He and I have been voices on a variety of podcasts.
Good morning.
Good morning. I had four parts, maybe five, I forget now, in Murder at Avedon Hill. A couple of them were not credited with little bit parts, or he would get in touch with me at like 8 o'clock at night or 6 o'clock in the morning and say, I've got this one piece I don't have any voice for, can you do it? I remember he did the Patrick Henry speech, recorded it for a project that didn't go anywhere. It was going to be Famous Lost Words. And while we have the text of Patrick Henry's speech, we don't have the audio, we don't have the performance. We don't necessarily hear what it sounded like in the assembly room of Henrico Parish. Or we didn't. We do now. And I did the intro for it so that Patrick Henry had the full voice. That's cool. But the nature of the internet, of the web, of social media in all of its forms, going back to blogging and podcasting, Twitter, the basic forums before Facebook branched out of college campuses, before Google. And one of the things that has continued to resonate with me over the years is the amount of tragedy. Now, the thing is, I'm pretty sure the internet hasn't caused more, but what it does is it lets us connect with it more. Without the web, I wouldn't know Patrick PG. And because of it, I'm touched by his imminent passing. The same thing happened to me in Second Life. There was a the community I was part of there was relatively small, as these things go. Maybe a few hundred people. And over the 3 or 4 years I was there, we lost, I think, 2 or 3. A woman I was working with was there one day and gone the next. I forget now if it was a heart attack or stroke, but it was once one of those. in theory, there is a limit. It's called the Dunbar limit, and it's postulated to be around 150 people, which is the theoretical limit wherein you can be, is your number of friends, basically. That's the number of people you have connection with. Monk post. And the Dunbar limit is interesting in that it suggests that cognitive processing has an upper limit wherein it becomes very, very difficult, more and more difficult, once you get above the Dunbar limit, to be friends with somebody new without losing track of somebody you knew before. And whenever one of these occurrences comes along, I always think of that and wonder if, because it seems really common, and I wonder if the richness of the connections, for all of the people poo-poo Facebook friends and Twitter followers, the fact that we are able to push the Dunbar limit individually in our own lives because of those connections. And I'm convinced that we do. Yeah, there's a lot of superficiality. There's a lot of friends, and then there's a lot of acquaintances. And as far as I know, Dunbar is silent on acquaintances. You can know an awful lot of people, but not actually have a kind of connection to them. You can even have a shared history, as in college classmates. Some of the college classmates. When I was at Millard Fillmore College back at SUNY Buffalo, there were two or three people that I were my fellow classmates. We shared history, and they pretty much disappeared from my life now. Working at the insurance company there was a couple of people with whom I was relatively close, but I've completely lost track of now. I think that was the second job I was fired from. And the company did me a huge favor. It was in the middle of a buyout, and the little insurance company that I was working for was being sucked up by a big New Jersey company who was having difficulty getting licensed in New York State. And so their solution was to buy a company that was already licensed in New York State, and ours happened to be it. And they kept saying, well, you know, nothing's going to change, everybody's job is safe, it's just, we just need to be able to operate in New York, and what's going to happen is that your lines will get larger, you'll have a deeper collection of products to be able to sell, and deeper pockets to back them. So. Yes, don't worry, nothing's going to happen. And then I started getting phone calls from the hardware vendors because I was the department head there. And the hardware vendors were calling up saying, so why are you shifting? And we had a Wang mini system there. So why are you shifting to IBM? It's like, what? Why are you shifting to IBM? IBM has got an order. Where do you want it delivered? What do you mean that IBM has an order? And it turns out that this company was buying equipment, getting ready to ship it in, getting ready to strip out the department, getting ready to fire, basically, everybody who worked for the company including the president, who kept trying to tell us, no, nothing's changing, nothing's changing. So I went to the president and said, I'm getting these phone calls, and regardless of what they're telling you, this is what's going on. And his commentary to me was, well, it's, you know, I'm sure you're just mistaken. I'm sure this is nothing to do with what's going on. And then I went to visit them. They brought me in for an interview. And I was a complete and utter dork. And within about a week of going home again, they fired me. Four things that I said during the interview. And it was clear that, this was not, culturally, this was not a fit for me. This was a big iron shop. This is an IBM shop. This was something that I have had played in before. And it was a company that was still stuck in the 1980s. It was an insurance company that still believed that their product was the paper and not the promise that was on the paper. And in spite of the fact that they kept losing lawsuits, and some of them rather large, they maintained that fiction that their product was in fact the paper that rolled off their massive, it was a huge printer, printing thousands of policies a minute. And their perception was that it was the paper that mattered, not the promise. And they operated their business on that assumption, denying pretty much all the claims that came in, fighting the ones that they needed to fight, and losing generally, but having claimants give up and not fight them for the promises that they made. And earning a healthy profit in the process. So, yeah, this was not a good fit for me. And so they fired me, and I went to work for a company banging steel. And until they started doing some rather questionable business practices, and until we decided we would move out here, and I gave them my 2 weeks' notice and left. But this idea that because we are more broadly connected, that we have these channels that were not available back in 1990, the latter days of the 20th century, the connections, the web wasn't there. And because of that, I really feel like my life is richer. Minutes, 18:13 on the second half. I have to have enough breath to talk. But yeah, the web has made my life richer. But it comes with a price. And the price is that with this super extended family, becomes the greater probability of this kind of news coming out of the blue. Pretty much the way life works. Out of the blue. It's a beautiful morning. A few puffy clouds, mostly blue skies. It's relatively cool, although I've worked up a sweat walking. But I'm at the back gate. Tomorrow is another day. And with any luck at all, I'll talk to you then.